You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleese Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Action Comics number 996, Detective Comics number 973, Doomsday Clock number 3, Nightwing the New Order number 6, Supergirl season 3 episode 11 Fort Roz, Flash season 4 episode 11 The Elongated Night Rises, Black Lightning season 1 episode 2 LaWanda the Book of Hope, and Arrow Season 6, Episode 11, We Fall. But before we get into that, let's get into some DC news. All right, first up for DC news, Justice League No Justice series is going to be coming out, written by Scott Snyder, Josh Williamson, and James... I can never pronounce his name. James Tyrion?
Sure.
Yeah. James Tynion the Fourth. Now, of course, with art from Francis Manapole, and it'll run weekly in May. And No Justice, Brainiac arrives on Earth with a warning for DC heroes about an impending threat that can only be stopped if the Justice League joins forces with some of DC's worst villains. I'm not really interested in this storyline. I don't know about you.
Not even a little bit. I have been very underwhelmed, as listeners know, if they've heard my reviews of Metal. So, I mean, and then again, I want to say Metal's not bad. It's just like, not that good. And I kind of like what Priest is doing with Justice League right now. So, like, it just seems really unnecessary. I think I would have been more excited if they had not transitioned to a new creative team and were still with the one that was really bad. But they did switch, and the switch has been pretty good. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I'm not that excited, to be honest.
I'm not that excited. I'm not really. You know me. I'm not that into making the villains heroes that much. But they say after the conclusion of this Justice, No Justice storyline, Scott Snyder's supposed to be taking over the writing duties of Justice League. And then James Tynion the Fourth and Josh Williamson are supposed to be doing other spinoff series of the Justice League.
That's such a bad idea. See, that's honestly, I think, a huge mistake on their part, regardless of whether or not Snyder's Justice League book is good, which it probably will be. You dilute the market with that. Like, if you want your Justice League book to sell well, it should be the only Justice League book. It's the same thing. Marvel has the same problem with Avengers and with Spider-Man, is that those characters do sell well, but they are splitting their market up by having so many different titles. If you want it to do well, you should have just one.
They've been doing it for a long time. I've thought that since... You know, I first started buying comics, and there being so many Batman titles and so many Spider-Man titles, because I used to buy them all because I love both characters. But I always thought, man, there's a lot of titles. Plus, the story could be a lot more cohesive if they, got rid of all the extra titles.
Well, because that's how you get – that honestly is how you get continuity errors, is when you have four different titles with the same character going on. Inevitably, something's going to fall through the cracks, and you're going to have something that doesn't really make sense. Yeah, and I'm not like a huge continuity stickler, but I mean, those kind of silly storytelling things, or you all of a sudden you have to leap over these things that you wouldn't have to if you just had one title. I don't think it's a good idea. I also don't think either of those writers are fantastic. So it doesn't really get me. Those should be good.
The Justice League title right now, which is being written by Christopher Priest, is going to be ending in April's issue number 43, and the Justice League of America, that's written by Steve Orlando, is also going to end in April with issue 29. So both of those series are ending. Then we'll go on to this Justice League No Justice. And then spinning off from that, we're going to get, I think there's going to be four different Justice League teams. You get team, and this is what the article I was reading talked about. There's Team Mystery, which is going to have Martian Manhunter, Sinestro, Superman, Starfire, and Starro. And I'm like, Starro? Really? The next team is Team Entropy. Lobo, Lex Luthor, Beast Boy, Batman, and Deathstroke. Then you've got Team Wonder, Raven, Dr. Fate, Zatanna, Wonder Woman, and Etrigan the Demon. And then finally you have Team Wisdom, Cyborg, Harley Quinn, Atom, The Flash. And I believe it's... Well, I don't know, I'm not even sure which Kid Flash it is now that I'm thinking about it. I think I do. I knew when the article, when I read the article, but I forget now. And then Robin, Damian Wayne version. So we're going to have some Teen Titans on these Justice League. We're going to have villains. I mean, I know Harley Quinn's a popular character, but do we really need her on a Justice League? And does that mean she's leaving Suicide Squad?
I don't know. And I mean, this goes along with that whole you're diluting your product thing. Like, why not just have one giant team? You know, I don't. This seems dumb.
Yeah. Why can't we have a Justice League? I like how Justice League International, the animated series, had revolving characters.
Great.
Yeah, they had revolving characters all the time, mixing things up. It was great.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I'm not really excited about these teams.
I think it's going to, like, to me, I think, does anybody think this is going to succeed? Honestly, it just, to me, it feels like something we all already kind of know deep down that's going to bomb. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I know what you're saying.
Like, when I see that announcement, I'm like, I feel like that's going to last, like, you know, half a year or so, and they're going to cancel it or they're going to switch things because it's not going to work. Like, I'm not trying to be pessimistic. That's just like immediately when I saw that, I was like, that's not going to work. That's not going to last.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a few people out there that are excited. I'm not one of them.
Right, and I'm not saying that people can't be excited about it, but I feel like most people, if they're being honest, have to know that that's not going to work.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Let's move on to our next piece of DC news. Doomsday Clock is switching to a bi-monthly schedule. And I don't have any problem with that because the series has been so good, so I'd rather them take their time on getting it out. They had already talked about, before announcing the bi-monthly schedule, there was going to be a big gap between February's issue and May's issue. But February's issue is now moved to March. So we had an issue come out this month in January. Then now our next one's going to be in March and then in May, and then it keeps going bi-monthly after that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I would rather it not be rushed. I'm surprised how it was this quick. I would have thought that they would have been further ahead than this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the only thing that surprises. I'm not surprised. Like, I assumed at some point it would get delayed, but I thought it would catch up to them later rather than as soon as it has.
At least they're taking their time to get it done. So that's
right. Yeah. And I can't complain. I mean, and let's be real. Honestly, we all know that the sales for this are going to be vastly larger when they get to the trade. That's just how it is. And that's how comics are in general. And especially something like this, that is basically tailor made to be a trade. That's where the sales are really going to be. So ultimately I don't think it's going to matter in the long run.
Yeah. So, well, at least they're taking their time and not rushing it.
Yeah.
Like this Justice League storyline where they're going to have... Well, I think there's an issue coming out every week, so it's going to be like four issues in a month. It's going to seem rushed.
Yeah.
All right, and our last bit of DC news. There's a Deathstroke versus Batman series coming from Christopher Priest and Carlo Pagliano. I'm sure I messed that name up, but I'm not excited about this one either. And Christopher Priest is going to be really busy if he's working on Justice, on that Justice League No Justice, and on this story also. I'm wondering if he's going to be leaving Deathstroke.
I don't know.
Maybe. No, I just thought about it. Maybe this storyline is going to become part of the Deathstroke title. I don't know. I don't know if it's separate or not.
It's easier for writers to work on multiple titles.
That is true. All right, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
My name is Brian Foster.
Everything you know is wrong. Got that?
Now, the reason that I'm calling is because I have begun to suspect you don't have any ladybugs in your freezer.
Hey cuz, Roy here. So about your car?
The darkness was never empty.
There's this presence in my head.
But I'm pretty sure that the book was confiscated by cats.
You're damn right we find a lot of bodies when Foster is around.
And some people call me the Night Blogger.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
And we're back. Let's talk Action Comics number 996. Superman and Booster land on New Krypton. And we find out that the real name of the planet is Jekul. And Skeets figures out that they are decades into the future. And of course the time sphere got damaged when they landed there.
But we don't even get that first, right? Isn't the opening part of the comic Lois's story?
Is it?
I think it is. I'm growing increasingly frustrated. I'm not going to lie to you. I skimmed Lois's thing, and I didn't even think I missed anything, really. I'm so checked out of that storyline because it is so I don't get it. Why are we reading about this?
You know what? I didn't put anything about her storyline in my notes. Is that pretty sad?
I don't blame you. Honestly, nothing really happens, which is why when I skimmed through, I felt like, oh, I didn't miss anything because nothing happens.
No, I think Lois talks to a few contacts and John's standing in the shadows. That's about all that happens with their part of the storyline.
It is blowing my mind. I really am increasingly confused as to why in God's name this is part of this story. I just don't get it. There's no need. Like, this is Action Comics isn't even the family oriented book. You know what I mean? That's Superman.
Yeah.
So, like, it doesn't even make sense that they feel the need to have Lois and Jonathan be part of this. Like, they're traditionally not. A lot of times it's usually just Superman.
Yep. Or once in a while it focuses on Lex. Of course, we know Lex isn't a Superman anymore.
Right. So I don't get it. I do not get it.
I don't know. I'm looking through my notes. I didn't put anything about Lois and John in here. So. All right. Well, we find out that after Zod freed his family from the Phantom Zone, they came to this planet and General Zod conquered it. Now, Skeets figures out that they're actually in the future. They're not in present time. And another thing I thought that was interesting, Skeets mentioned the Earth Krypton War. And I'm wondering if that's a future storyline we're going to see.
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt in my mind.
I was like, that sounds really interesting. Now, this new Krypton is a slaver planet, we find out. Booster Gold and Superman are trying to figure things out. The Eradicator shows up. Not just the Eradicators that were chasing after them before on old Krypton, but the Eradicator. And he recognizes Superman right away. While they're battling the Eradicator, a speedster shows up. Where it looks like it's a speedster, but it's not really a speedster. It's a Zod's son, Lor Zod. And he's all grown up.
Yeah, this was cool. I mean, this is sort of nice payoff to the Zod storyline that we kind of knew was coming when he, you know, pulled his family out of the Phantom Zone. It's cool. I'm very surprised that the Booster story bled into this. I just wasn't expecting it. It just seemed kind of like I assumed Booster's story would wrap up way sooner than it has. Not that I'm complaining. it's starting to feel a little bit like Booster's kind of a secondary character for you know what I mean? Like, I thought he was just going to be a guest star, and he's feeling more like a secondary character, which is awesome. But also, I'm not sure what Juergens is doing exactly. It feels like he's just kind of throwing storyline after storyline. Like, I don't really know what I'm doing. So I'm just going to wade into the next story.
Yeah. I'm wondering how this ties up with Krypton blowing up.
I don't think this is what I'm saying. I feel like we've gone completely past that at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like...
See, I'm wondering if he's tying this into that somehow.
I would think, but at the moment, I'm not seeing the connection.
Yeah, the connection is definitely not obvious here. But I'm wondering because it just feels like it to me, just because we had Zod on the old Krypton and stuff, I just think it's going to tie up somehow. We just can't see what it is yet.
Yeah.
And... I don't know. Do you feel like this is going to wrap up in the next issue, or do you think it's going to go longer than that?
I don't even know anymore. Like, I don't know what Juergens is doing. Like, I'm enjoying the ride with Booster, but it just feels like we're just hopping from story to story almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's possible. It could be right. I have no clue. Like, I have no clue where it doesn't – to me, I'm enjoying the stories, but there doesn't seem to be a coherent flow to the stories.
Yeah. And right now, they're trapped there. I don't know how they're going to get the time sphere fixed. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where the story goes from here. I'm hoping he has some sort of direction and he's just not bouncing around everywhere. Eventually, we want to know what happens with Krypton and why Dr. Manhattan took Jor-El off there before it exploded. That was the whole point of the story, I thought. But we've gotten away from that.
Yes, we did.
I mean, some nice stuff has happened, though. I mean, we got to go a little in-depth with Booster's origin, like a retelling of it, almost, for people that aren't familiar with Booster Gold. And now we're getting into this. I don't know. I think it's going to circle back to what he originally was trying to do. We just don't see the connection yet. All right, let's move on to our next title, Detective Comics number 973. Well, she did it, Cletus. Batwoman went for the kill shot. Dr. October was able to finish her treatment, and Cassandra delivered it, and Clayface turned back to Basil. But before he really had... When he started to turn back into Clayface, Batwoman took that shot. Right to his head, too. But they left it open. I'm wondering if he survives that or not.
I don't know. I want to say yes, because that would be a extremely dark ending to that story and to the story they've been telling since Rebirth. So I want to say yes, he survives, just because that would be... I feel like very unsatisfying to most readers. I feel like most readers don't want that to see that be the ending. Not that you should cater to your audience, but like, you know, come on. Comic books are meant to be enjoyable, not this comic hasn't been so good that the sadness would be profound. It would just be sort of like, oh, well, that was a waste of time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there are stories, certainly, there are certainly fantastic comic book stories that have gut-wrenching endings. This one, to me, wouldn't be gut-wrenching. It'd be like, oh, wow, so you guys just basically jerked us around for a year and a half. Awesome.
Yeah, because part of this whole story was the redemption of Clayface.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if they kill him, then there's really was really no point to the story.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt just because it would be such an extremely unsatisfying ending if they really did just kill him there, because honestly, I have to ask, like, why? Why did you even bother putting him on the team? Like, we got, in my opinion, nothing out of it.
Right. And one of the things this issue did, we saw the very beginning of the team forming with Bruce and Tim talking and him setting up the bell tower, and then them talking about bringing Clayface onto the team. See, we also saw in this issue that Tim gets a concussion, and then also we see a disagreement between Anarchy and First Victim, which we saw the breaking up of them beginning in last issue. And basically Anarchy stops the First Victim and turns him over to Spoiler and gives her a thumb drive with the identity of the First Victim on it, but they didn't reveal who it was yet. By the end of the issue, I felt like, is this the end of the team?
It kind of feels that. Well, it's, I have to say this, in my opinion, this title as a whole, it felt like the team has kind of fallen apart anyway. Not necessarily within the story, but from a narrative standpoint, it's not really a team book anymore. It's sort of just like one person's drama and these other tangential characters are there. You know what I mean? It's become less about the team and more about like, well, this is a Batwoman story and this is a Clayface story and this one's a Robin story. It's not felt like a team book for some time, in my opinion.
You're right. It was definitely more of a team at the beginning. Now it's just, you're right, it's been focused on a certain character. We've been seeing that for quite a while.
And again, yeah, like technically, yes, the team still exists. I get that within the book, but yeah, I don't know.
It just feels like it's falling apart to me, and I'm wondering if this is leading into the Justice League No Justice thing too.
Yeah, part of me wonders, like, we know Detective Comics is sticking around. That is not going to get canceled. Part of me wonders if they're going to be rebooting it somehow.
Yeah, it feels like, what is it? It hasn't even been 2 years yet of Rebirth, and it feels like they're doing a lot of rebooting when they don't really need to.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's move on to the next title. Let's move on to Doomsday Clock number 3. All right, I think one of the most important things to learn from Doomsday Clock number 3 is don't eat Batman's pancakes or you'll end up in Arkham Asylum.
My biggest takeaway from this comic was, why was there a mystery surrounding who Rorschach was? He's no one. I didn't get that.
I didn't get that either.
And he pulled off his mask and he was, and understandably, it was going to be super hard for that identity to mean anything, because one of the hard things with comics is if you do a face reveal, it's almost impossible for that to mean anything to the reader. That's why you almost always have to have it accompanied by dialogue, because artists draw characters different ways. You know what I mean? It's not the same as in a movie where it's clearly a certain actor or actress. So when he just pulls off the mask and he's just a dude, it's just like, well, that makes sense. Like, that's the most logical answer. But why did we, like, what? What was the whole deal with the first couple issues? He's just a dude.
I had this feeling we were supposed to know who he was. Was he? See, I didn't get a chance to read. We don't know who he is. But I had a feeling that we were supposed to know him. But I was wondering, because I didn't get a chance to research it, but I was wondering if he was somebody who was in the original Watchmen storyline that was there in the newspaper room to receive the journal. I wanted to go back and look at that, but I never got a chance to this week.
I'm almost positive he is. I'm like 99.9% sure that is a completely new character.
Okay. So, I take it you didn't get that feeling like you were supposed to know.
Well, no, I did. When he first pulled it off, I was like, oh, am I supposed to know who that is? But okay. No.
Yeah.
My best guess beforehand was that he was the kid reading the Black Freighter comic next to the newsstand. But it didn't make sense because we saw that kid die in the comic. And so, and it's not him. So, I don't know. I think it's just supposed to be some dude, which is fine. I have no problem with that. I just don't know why it was played up for mystery if that was the answer the whole time.
I don't know. And who knows? Maybe they will reveal who this dude is through some flashback or something.
True.
In one of
true.
The future issues. Point. So maybe that
I
was
don't
the...
think he needs to be. Like, I'm fine with that. It makes the most sense that he's just another guy off the street. Like, that absolutely makes sense. Again, it was just the way it was presented in the first couple issues. It was like, okay, if you want to present it that way, then make him somebody.
Did you expect Batman to lock him up in Arkham Asylum?
I wasn't, but it does make, again, it's one of those things that makes a ton of sense.
Oh, yeah, it makes total sense. I thought it was freaking hilarious. And then, of course, he gets in there and there's writing on the cell wall that says, "We're all mad here." So you knew that the Mad Hatter had been in that cell at some point.
I've been surprised at how slow this story has rolled out. It feels like, honestly, it feels like maybe two issues worth of story so far. Maybe. But we've gotten three issues. So I'm hoping we know at some point it has to pick up a little bit. Like, I don't need a breakneck pace because it is 12 issues. But it does feel like this is a really slow burn on the story.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Even Watchmen, you have, like, Watchmen certainly is not, like, you know, working at a snappy pace. But more happens in the first three issues of Watchmen than has happened so far in this.
That is true. Now, I'm wondering, since Rorschach's in Arkham Asylum, if he's going to be coming across Saturn Girl. That's something
I have to assume.
Yeah, that's what I was too. The other thing I'm wondering is why is the new Rorschach helping Ozymandias if he hates him so much? They haven't explained that either. They really haven't explained what their connection is yet.
No.
Now, at the beginning of this issue, we see Ozymandias attacking Comedian. And we see him throw him out of the window. But then we find out that Dr. Manhattan snatches him up before he hits the pavement. And he kind of lands in water in the DC Universe. You know, he's out on the beach and the Watchmen button ends up in front of him. But if Dr. Manhattan snatched him from the Watchmen universe and brought him here, is that going to affect the Watchmen timeline or not for some reason?
I want to say no, because we've seen it not affect the timeline.
That is true. We've seen it not affect the timeline, but it's weird that it hasn't affected the timeline. Because you would think his body's not there, things would change in the Watchmen universe. I don't know. It's one of those paradox kind of things. The other thing that we find out in this issue is Batman's costume is different. He has the yellow background behind his bat. I went back to issue 2 when they introduced Batman. Because I was like, wait a minute. Did I miss that last issue? I went back and looked. They never drew him where they were showing his insignia on his costume, because I was kind of curious if the if pulling Comedian out of the Watchmen timeline and bringing him to the DCU affected that. but I don't think it did.
So I saw an article, I don't know if you saw this, that they are going to be using that logo moving forward.
Yes, I saw that too.
So that's kind of interesting. I don't know. I'm not crazy about that, though, to be honest. I kind of like just the bat by itself.
Yeah, I was not used to it when Rebirth started because I was used to the yellow background Batman. I got used to it, you know, since Rebirth started. And when I saw it, it didn't seem like it was drawn correctly to me. It looked weird. Probably because I'm used to the old version. So, but yeah, I did see the article where they said they were going to use that moving forward. So once the comics jump forward, or not really jump forward, catch up with the Doomsday future timeline, I'm sure we'll see the switch. All right, and the other thing we saw in this issue, we saw Mime and Marionette break out of their handcuffs and make their way to a bar, which happened to be one of Joker's bars. And one of the things I thought was really interesting is when Mime held out his gun, he was actually able to shoot with it. So we kind of find out he's a metahuman in this. That kind of surprised.
I don't think he is. I think it's an invisible weapon. Did you see the light glint off of it?
Yeah, I thought maybe it was forming in his hand.
I don't think so, because remember, he does go to collect his weapons, and everybody keeps rolling their eyes like he's not really grabbing anything.
Yeah,
and I think
I
the implication is that there was really, they really did actually have weapons the whole time.
Hmm. All right, well, I'm hoping they explain that further. I thought it was cool. I was like, oh, cool, Mime's a
metahuman.
It was super
cool. That whole sequence, it was especially... once the wire got involved, it was gruesome, but it was really cool.
Yeah, it was. And now Mime and Marionette, they're going off in search of Joker. And we know there's three different versions of the Joker in the Rebirth version of DCU. So it'll be interesting to see which version of the Joker they run into. Because so far we've only seen...
They're going to get into that because they've not really done anything with that.
Nope, they haven't. The only Joker we've seen so far is from a flashback from Tom King's War of Joke and Riddles, which was earlier in Batman's career. So I'm really hoping they explore that. I mean, they got several things they could be exploring. Like you said, this is a slow going, but I see it setting up stuff like Saturn Girl and the Three Joker storyline and stuff. So I'm hoping we get into that stuff. All right. Anything else you want to say about Doomsday Clock before we move on?
No, it's really good. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I do think it's a little bit too slow, but I mean, it's still a fantastic comic, and some of the sequences in there are just great. Like when the comedian gets pulled through reality to the DC universe was super cool. The fight in the bar was really cool, and the artwork is just incredible. So I mean. Again, it's slow, yes, but also really good. So, obviously excited for the next one, even though it's going to take a little bit longer now.
Yeah, now we have to wait till March for it to come out now. So, every other month. All right, let's move on to our next title, Nightwing, The New Order Number 6, the final issue. And when we left off with issue number 5, we found out that Dick had made a deal with Kate, and we find out that we actually find out what the deal was. He turned over Lex Luthor, Superman, and the other Titans in exchange for Jake's freedom.
So, did you find this issue a little unsatisfying?
Yes.
It was the weakest issue of the six. I really didn't dislike Eddie, like as listeners will know, I was a huge fan of the first 5 issues. This one's certainly not bad, but it felt like such a safe way to end the comic. The whole time, the comic had been doubling down on the hypocriticalness of Dick and how he would, despite the fact that he wants to save his son, he still doesn't want to back down on his stance on metahumans. And then after 5 issues of pushing that and pushing that and pushing that, he just changes his mind on a whim. I was like, what? If you were going to, that's so lazy. If you were going to do that, you should have just done it 4 issues ago. It would have made, honestly, to me, it would have made more sense then, because it makes no sense when he actually does it. He's already betrayed the team like 3 different times. Why would then be the time that he changes his mind?
I don't know. I mean, he just made that deal. They just leave. He has a short conversation with Jake about it. You know, Jake's adamant about wanting to go back and help the Titans. And Dick just changes his mind all of a sudden.
That just, yeah, it so easily changes his mind. How is that what changes his mind? His wife never could. All of the other Titans never could. What? I don't get it. I just do not get that. And then the whole time, I will admit, clearly I was wrong. I was clearly wrong. I thought there was something else going on with this conflict. And it turns out it's just nothing. It's literally just Batwoman going after these guys.
Yeah. We talked about maybe somebody else being behind it, but...
The whole time, it seemed like there was something else going on. It felt like there was something wrong. And multiple people seemed to suspect that something else was going on. And then nothing else was going on.
The other thing I didn't like about the story is when they get back and Lex Luthor hooks Jake up, he powers Superman back up. I'm like, yay. And then all of a sudden, Lex does this turn. We find out that Lex had built the machine not just to, you know, power people back up. He wanted to power everybody up. He didn't want to return to a world of unequals. And he made the machine so it would explode and take out Metropolis, even though it's going to give everybody else on Earth metahuman powers. I just found it disappointing. You know what I mean?
It was such a bizarre heel turn because, again, it's out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, this guy is a bad guy, but then he's just kind of leased. There's no comeuppance there. A, it didn't feel earned. It felt odd that that happened. B, again, he just gets away. And it really, to me, hammered home the point that there never really was a true bad guy in this. The story ultimately lacks a true antagonist. And I think that's why it kind of fell a little bit flat right at the end, is because it just turns out to just kind of fizzle out. Like, it's just they're chasing after him, and then all of a sudden they stop, and that's it.
Yeah.
There was no big sort of, like, I don't know. I thought it broke too many storytelling conventions to me right at the end for it to have a satisfying conclusion.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it didn't wrap up well, that's for sure. I think the problem was you got to the end, and there was no, like you said, there's really no bad guy. You had Lex do this weird turn. He wasn't even the one that caused Superman to go crazy. So it would have been nice if they had tied it back to that event.
It's too clean. I think my biggest problem is if you don't want to have a true antagonist, that's fine. But your ending can't be that kind of mushy then, in my opinion. You have to have something that makes the reader feel like, oh, ooh, that was a tough, like, kind of like Kingdom Come, right? Obviously, Kingdom Come has some antagonists, but the thing that really makes, like, the ending so powerful is because the decision there at the end is so tough, right?
Yeah.
And with this one, you don't get that. It's just a clean ending. They go up. Dick's son goes to help fly the lab out into the sky, and there's a big explosion, and every single person survives.
Yep.
The conflict just happily ends. Everybody's done. The legislation is wiped out after a couple years. Everybody gets a happy ending, which is nice. But there's no... After this whole story had had tough things happening to the character. Alfred dies. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's terrible things that happen throughout this story. And then it just tries to have its cake and eat it too right at the end. It's just this just kind of mushy bleh right at the end.
Right. Because it ends with, we find out Dick and Corey stay friends as best as they can. It says something like, they both love Jake and were always there for him. Dick spent his remaining days teaching kids with powers how to control them. And then Jake's story ends with his wife and a newborn son, which he names Richard after his dad. And basically, you know, Jake's holding the newborn with his wife. They're looking out the window, and you see kids in the neighborhood playing basketball, flying around and stuff. So you know everybody got metahuman powers.
Which is cool. It's a cool concept. It's just one of those things, like, honestly, like, if this was a movie, I would swear that the last 15 minutes of the movie was directed by somebody else.
That's, I think, what feels so goofy about it is it doesn't feel like they overcame anything.
Exactly. It just sort of ends.
Yeah.
Again, there's no sort of big moment or anything. It just sort of this... It's also confusing because I was really confused at what Lex was doing. I had to read that scene a couple times to fully understand what was going on. It's just, yeah. I'm being so critical because I'm so disappointed. The rest of the series was so good. I had such high expectations for how this was going to end, and it just sort of... It's not bad. I want to emphasize this to people who haven't read it. It's certainly not a bad issue. It's just so mediocre. And when the rest of the series was as good as it was, in my opinion, to have such a kind of bleh ending, it just makes it stand out more.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was excited about the ending of it, too, and it just kind of fizzled out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up the comics we're going to talk about this week. I have one more title for what you should be reading, which is Teen Titans number 16, and it's a Starfire one-shot adventure featuring Raven and Beast Boy, which is pretty good. If you want to check out a Starfire story one-shot, check out that issue. All right, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast, and on this show, we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at MetalGeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter.
Metal Geeks on Instagram.
And Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 3, Episode 11, Fort Roz. All right, well, in this episode, Kara teams up with Livewire, Psy, and Irma. And they take the Legion ship into space and head to Fort Roz, which is currently orbiting a blue sun. So Kara's not going to have her powers while they're there. And the reason why they're heading out there is they're looking for the priestess that... The one gentleman who was the religious dude from a few episodes back had gotten his information about Rain from.
I was surprised at the team that they chose for this. I liked it. I thought there would be different. There must have been different options. To be fair, when I was trying to think of them, like the only other one I could think of was Miss Martian, seemed like an obvious one, but again, obviously she is doing other things. So that was fair, but I was just like, oh, I guess that is the best team that they can come up with, but it just didn't seem like it was when I was watching it.
All right, when Kara finds the priestess, she delivers a villainous speech gloating about hellfire to come when the others wake up. The power, the pestilence, and purity... she was talking about. And when Rain finally shows up at Fort Roz, she vaporizes the priestess. I wasn't expecting that.
She was sent there explicitly to kill the priestess.
Well, was she?
She was.
Okay.
It didn't make sense in the moment because she had, so Rain goes there specifically to kill the priestess before she can tell Supergirl anything so that Supergirl doesn't know what the plan is. which makes sense.
Yeah.
But when she actually kills her, she's already basically spilled the beans. I was like, well, what's the point? At this point, you might as well take her with you. You know what I mean? Like, at that point, I mean, she's already – the reason you went out there to kill her is already gone. Like, the cat is out of the bag. So at that point, she's got to be helpful. Like, she's clearly on your side.
The thing about Rain is she doesn't really seem to think very well.
Well,
kind of like more like a zombie, or she's basically programmed.
Yeah.
Now, one thing we learn about Rain is apparently she doesn't need the yellow sun to have her powers. So,
which makes sense when we saw in the previous episode that kryptonite didn't really affect. Like, if Supergirl had been injected with kryptonite, she'd be dead.
Yeah,
she would be dead. So that makes sense. And then they get – so I wasn't surprised that the yellow sun didn't affect her. Also, I mean, she is the big bad villain. You've got to break the rules for her somehow.
We got a cool battle between Livewire and Rain, though.
We did. And another cool sequence before that fight when – I was a little confused how it happened because it kind of just happened out of the blue. But when those wraiths or whatever they are get sucked out into space with Livewire – that brief moment where she like turns back in electricity to hop back into the station was super cool. I didn't totally get how that had happened in the first place, but it was a cool scene nonetheless.
Yeah, it was. Then we see Rain try to attack Kara, and we see Livewire jump in front of her and take the blast. So Livewire ends up saving Kara. Which is kind of sad because I like Livewire as a villain. I'd like to see her stick around longer.
I agree. I think I could – somebody definitely correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure she is playing Jughead's mom on Riverdale. So that is why they killed that character off.
Okay.
It doesn't totally seem necessary because you could just like not have Livewire show up. It's not like she was around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I guess at the same time, maybe they would never have a chance to wrap that character up if they didn't do it now. So in that sense, it's nice to have some sort of send-off for the character.
Yeah.
It was nice to see that arc kind of come to a close.
Yeah. And, you know, basically we got a redemption from her. Now, if she's on Riverdale, I haven't seen her yet or remember seeing her. I'm actually one episode behind of Riverdale. I haven't seen last week's episode yet. So, and I do remember hearing that Jughead's mother was going to show up sometime soon or seeing a preview about it. So it could have very well effect happened in that episode I haven't seen.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I saw a commercial of it and I am almost positive it was her when she, because like she turns around and it's very brief, but I was like, oh, I think that's Livewire. And then the light went off in my head and I was like, oh, that's why they killed Livewire.
Side note, if you haven't been watching Riverdale, it's been really good. All right, there's my plug on that. After Livewire takes the blast for Supergirl, Psy shows up and attacks Rain mentally, and we briefly see Rain turn back to Samantha, where she's wondering where she's at and what's going on, but that's short-lived as she turns back into Rain and flies off. Flipping to another part of the story, I found it hilarious that Wynn and Brainiac were bickering back and forth. And I love the fact that Wynn thought of bouncing their signal off the Voyager 2 satellite. I thought that was a cool idea.
Yeah, it was cool seeing Wynn be the one to outsmart Brainiac there. Yep. It was fitting.
In another part of the story, we saw that when Samantha states that she needs to go on a business trip, so Alex volunteers to keep Ruby. And Alex, she gets a text from Maggie asking her if she has her passport or that she thinks she left her passport there. We see Alex dealing with the feelings, she's been trying to get over Maggie. And then to get the text and happen to deal with the passport thing, Ruby was a great way to try to get Maggie off of Alex's mind, especially the way Alex dealt with Ruby's bully. I thought that was really cool.
I agree. It was a great scene.
Right, and another scene I thought was great in this episode was the scene we had between Kara and Mon-El.
Yeah, I agree. A part of me, I have to say, at a certain point, I have to wonder when Mon-El is going to stop saying, look, I know this is hard on you, because at a certain point it starts to get condescending. But after that spot, the rest of the scene was really nice. It was nice to see them be able to talk and not, like, just be super awkward.
Yeah. Then we get to the end of the episode, and basically they reveal another world killer to the audience. Looks like we're going to be heading off into that storyline soon. So it'll be interesting to see a Supergirl, Team Supergirl against Team Rain.
That'll be fun. I think that's going to be really cool. I have to say, in my opinion, this is easily the best season of Supergirl, and it's because it's so focused. It's the first season, in my opinion, that has a clear end game. Basically, from the first episode, it clearly knows where it is going, which I do not think some of the previous seasons have known where they're going. And it's building a clear story through that. Like, it is building very well, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. We have not seen this in previous Supergirl seasons. And we've wondered where they were going before. We know where this one's going.
Yeah.
Before, we've wondered, are they doing this storyline? Are they doing this storyline? Wait, they did half a season of this storyline, and all of a sudden they switched, like, it's a whole different story. You know, so it's nice this season to see that they know where they're going.
I agree. And I think also, the thing it has in common with the best CW superhero shows in general, the best seasons are the ones, again, where you have a clear villain and it's a clear, basically straight line from the first episode to the last episode. You can see that arc, right?
Yep.
The best seasons of Arrow are the ones that they were able to do that. The best seasons of The Flash were was season one, where they was clearly the Reverse Flash from beginning to end. Season two, when it was clearly Deathstroke from beginning to end, essentially. I think this is, and again, I don't think it's a coincidence that this is going to be the best season of Supergirl, because they've figured out a way to have a clear beginning to end villain without it dragging on. I think the way that they've incorporated Rain into the story is genius, because it allows her to be constantly around without it feeling like the story is artificially being dragged on.
Yep. I agree with you. All right, let's move on to our next show, Flash, Season 4, Episode 11, The Elongated Night Rises. I love that title.
I did too. It was awesome.
I could tell you, it's the title for this episode. for this episode of the podcast. All right, well, Barry is in prison. And we see that some of the inmates don't like the fact that Barry is talking to the cops, basically Joe. And they try to teach him a lesson. And we see Big Sur intervene. And we find out later that Big Sur was saved by Barry's father, Henry, when he was in there. He had to do an emergency removal of his appendix. And basically Big Sur was just kind of paying Henry back by, you know, protecting his son. I like how they're doing Barry in prison, and they're having the team do other stuff outside the prison. I think this is a great idea, because I was wondering if the focus was going to go off of Barry, but it seems like they're keeping the focus on Barry by having his story in prison while the team's handling stuff outside of prison.
Yeah, I thought they balanced it well. I do think it was smart to still kind of shift the focus to the B team, so to speak, a little bit. Just because, I mean, yes, it is still Barry's show, and it was clear it was still Barry's show this episode, but it's not that exciting to watch him just be in prison. So I do think I really liked what they did with this, where, again, they clearly gave a lot of attention to Barry, but still, you know, saved most of the fun action for the B team.
Right. I didn't feel like Barry was being cut out of the episode. That's what I liked about it.
Yeah.
So we see Big Sur later on get attacked by the same men that had jumped Barry that he had stopped before. And I like the way Barry uses his speed to make the attackers fight among themselves. Found it quite hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I really like what they've been doing a lot this season. They've been playing around a lot more with Flash moving so fast that everything else is still. Like, you know that that's how it kind of always is, but they've played around with that a lot more this season. It feels like that, at least.
Yeah, that's because they have been. And it's been really interesting what they've been doing with it.
I really like it. Like, I think, honestly, usually it's a better showcase of his speed. Like, again, I mean, obviously it's super cool seeing the lightning buzz around, but, you know, at a certain point, you're just watching, you know, streaks of light across the screen. This is kind of cool because it lets them play with camera angles a little bit, and they've done some really interesting, cool things, I think.
I agree with you. All right, while Barry is dealing with that stuff in prison, we see that Ralph is filling the void for the Flash. And at the beginning of this episode, we see a very cocky Ralph foil a hostage situation. While the villain is shouting out his demands to the police, Ralph sneaks in there and he snatches all the hostages. So when the villain turns around to look at the hostages, they're all gone. And Ralph is kind of standing there where they were. Now, of course, the villain has a bomb. And he tries to explode the bomb, and Ralph kind of just wraps himself around it as it explodes. And I found it quite amusing.
I did too.
So we find out that the trickster gets out of jail, and Ralph decides to go after him, and he's still got the same cocky manner he did when he went after the guy who took the hostages. But the trickster's ready for him. We see the trickster douse him in his E with that special acid, and basically it takes him out and discourages him from wanting to be a hero. Because the reason why he's being so cocky, he didn't think anything could hurt him.
And I thought that was fascinating because, like, we know Ralph is super cocky, but it was it didn't even occur to me that he thought that he was completely invulnerable until he voiced it. I was like, oh, okay, that actually, like, it kind of made sense. You know what I mean? Like, obviously it was funny first off, but also it was like, yeah, you would be, you know, strutting around if you thought literally nothing could hurt you.
Yeah. It kind of played to who we know Ralph is as a character on this show.
Yeah.
It made sense.
And it makes sense, too, because, like, obviously that acid would hurt unbelievably. Because, again, they're saying, like, it would have basically melted off the leg of anybody else. So, like,
yeah.
I don't doubt for a second that it was immensely painful, but it also makes sense why it mentally shut him down as much as he did. Because he literally thought he was invulnerable. And all of a sudden, this, you know, incredible pain. Like, yeah, that would throw me off, too. If, like, I was walking around thinking nothing could hurt me and then something like that, like, yeah, I would be thrown off.
Now, we see Trickster and Prank take some hostages. And because Ralph's discouraged, Cisco and Caitlin decide to go save the hostages that Trickster and Prank took. Yeah, but they end up getting captured themselves. And once Barry's back to, you know, cured, his knee's cured and he's back to normal, he gets the courage to go in there and go after them. It was really great.
Yeah, it was just a super fun episode. I'm obviously a huge fan of Ralph. We finally get the elongated man. I'm elongated man, or I elongate man. That was great.
Yeah. All right. Some of the things I got to mention. The prank in this episode was the original prank on the John Wesley ship, Flash. So it was nice to see her take up her role as Prank again.
Yeah, and she was good. I mean, I thought she hit the same note, basically, that Mark Hamill hit, so it was fitting in that regard. It was cool.
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm not a huge fan of the young trickster. Like, I kind of just would rather see Mark Hamill around.
I have to agree with you on that. I would have rather seen Mark Hamill, too, but this is what we got.
Yeah.
One of the other things I noticed was they played some music from the original series too in this. I don't know if it was Prank's music, or if it was Trickster's music, but it was the original. It was music from the original show. I loved how they tied in stuff from the original show. The other thing I wanted to mention was they mentioned a street corner was Bilson and DeMeo, who were the creators of the original show, Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo, who also did The Rocketeer and a short-lived series called Viper, which I really loved. So I thought that was cool how they mentioned them as street corner names in this episode. Thought that was really cool. Yeah. I love how this Flash ties back into the old series, bringing characters on from the old series. We've seen quite a few characters from the original series on here. And I am hoping we get to see Jay Garrick sometime soon in this season. I really want to see Jay.
I have to imagine we will. It would be weird if we didn't.
Yeah. I know he's really following this season of Flash because he keeps tweeting about it. Which is kind of cool. I love how excited John Wesley Shipp seems to be about this new Flash series.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next episode, Black Lightning, Season 1, Episode 2, LaWanda, The Book of Hope. Black Lightning is back. Or is he? Jefferson Pierce is still hesitant about returning to the crime-fighting life full-time.
I really liked the conflict in this, where you can see he really doesn't want to get back into being Black Lightning, but like, it just, as it goes on, it just feels more and more necessary that he does it. And you can tell that he's seeing it. Like, it becomes harder for him to justify not being Black Lightning. And when that woman is finally murdered by Lala, like, you, like, oh, he has to come back.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we have the mother LaWanda, whose daughter is kind of like trapped in that motel where the gang's staying. Mm-hmm. And she wants her daughter back. And one of the things she's wondering is why Black Lightning got Jefferson's daughters out of there but not hers. And she's bound and determined she's going to get her daughter back, even if she has to stand outside the hotel and protest. And Lala just, when he gets there and she confronts him, he just friggin' shoots her in the head.
It's brutal. Like,
right in friggin' broad daylight.
Yeah.
I mean, this show is showing that they're taking no prisoners. You know what I mean?
They don't pull any punches.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. They're not trying to pull any punches. One of the other things that shocked me was when that little boy rode by the Jefferson's home and the daughter Jennifer was out front, squirted her with that red water gun and just, you know, sprayed her like that was blood. I thought that was just so...
Yeah.
It was just so... Ugh. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and terrifying because that could have easily been a real gun. Oh, yeah. Oh, it was... You can tell. You can definitely tell these are different showrunners from the other superhero shows on the CW. And I think that's a good thing. I think it gives it such a fresh voice compared to the other ones. You know, it doesn't feel samey. And I feel like the conflict with this just feels a lot more real than it does in... Even in the really good seasons of these shows, like, you can always kind of separate yourself from the shows to a certain extent. This is just so much more visceral. It's been really great.
It really tears on your emotions too. I mean, yeah. when that kid did that, I was like, whoa. I just felt it in my gut. You know what I mean? I was like, daggone. You basically the gang was making a statement. You're marked for death.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And I have to say, it felt increasingly like the ex-wife. Her essentially for, because really, you could tell really the only reason he wasn't Black Lightning was essentially to get his ex-wife back, and it felt increasingly selfish of her to continue to demand that.
Yeah.
Because it felt like I get it, like I do understand, because it's, she doesn't want him to die, but it just felt like, how can you possibly look at all this other stuff that's happening and think to yourself, no, you definitely shouldn't go out and help at all.
Right. And the fact that, you know, she doesn't want him to go out, but she's like wishy-washy about whether she wants to get back together with them. You know, Jefferson needs to man up and just become Black Lightning, which we basically see him do in this episode.
Right. I do. I was so happy at the end of the episode when he's basically like, look, maybe that's what you keep giving me. Maybe I need to be Black Lightning. Like this is not, you know, really an option at this point. Like I have to do this. So,
right.
You know, what you deal with it.
I think the big thing that changed his mind is when LaWanda died. You know, well, that
even
was
before that. She raises such a fantastic point, which is, why does Black Lightning save your daughters but not mine? You know what I mean, because really, there's no way to answer that, right?
Yeah.
If you insist on staying Jefferson Pierce and not Black Lightning, then it's the most selfish thing he could do, would be to not use his powers, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Well, one of the things we see when LaWanda gets shot, she had, right before she got out, she set up her camera to take video. So when she does get shot, the police got evidence to arrest Lala. One of the other things I found surprising was how easily the main villain, what's his name?
Tobias Whale.
Yes, Tobias just freaking walks like into the prison like he freaking owns the place. So he walks in there, chokes him, and walks back out like it's just an everyday thing. And the cops just turn their heads.
I was surprised that they killed Lala this fast. Like he definitely was going to die. Like, there was not a doubt in my mind that character was not going to survive. But I was surprised it was that fast.
That was fast, because I thought he'd play more into going after Jennifer. You know what I mean?
I agree. Well, the other thing, I thought he would have served well as a sort of first half, or maybe at least first quarter of the season villain, to kind of, you know what I mean, sort of buy time until they get to Tobias.
Right.
But, I mean, so far everything they've done with the show has been really good, so I'm not necessarily complaining. I was just surprised.
Really great episode.
Yeah.
And I'm so bummed that no Black Lightning tonight.
Yes.
Stupid State of the Union speech.
As soon as the little news flash thing came on, I was like, no, come on, give me Black Lightning.
So, yeah, that was disappointing. But I'm very excited about seeing the next episode. I'm hoping it's on the streaming service tomorrow. I don't know, because they didn't get to show it unless they've showed it in some places. I don't know.
Yeah,
it'll be really interesting. Too. All right. Let's
I don't want to wait till Saturday.
I don't either. I don't either. At least we got to watch The Flash, which was awesome, but we're not going to talk about it till next week. All right. Let's move on to our last episode for this week. Arrow. Season 6, Episode 11, We Fall. Well, things go from bad to worse as Caden James begins attacking the city electronically, taking control of cars, elevator, hospital equipment, and killing people.
So there was a few interesting things that came out of this one. I did like the way the teams worked in this one. I won't lie. I still think I think the way that we got to this point is incredibly dumb. Really, really dumb. But I did like the dynamic this time around. Remember we were talking about how Team Arrow was all of these other villains and then some random dude? Well, the random dude kicked the bucket this episode, so that was good. So we're not all continually confused why he's somehow a major player. And then the biggest revelation is that Vigilante is in fact not on that team. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Because he basically talks to, I'm calling him Team Terrific. Vigilante basically talks to Team Terrific through one of Mr. Terrific's T-spheres. And, sends them a message. If I remember right, it was via Morse code, wasn't it?
Yep.
You know, he ends up giving them information to, I think it was to save the two subway cars, if I remember right.
Yes.
And it was kind of cool seeing them, Team Terrific, save the subway cars. They're trying desperately to get those tracks switched, and then Dinah just ends up using her canary cry to stop one of the trains. It was kind of cool. And then we got to see Team Oliver head to the tunnel bridge and save William. And I'm finally glad that William got to see Oliver in his Green Arrow costume, and they got past all this lying to William kind of stuff.
I agree. I was never a huge fan of that, because it felt, in part because you know that he's going to become Green Arrow again. Like, they're not going to just make the show suddenly about Diggle. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we know that they're not going to do that. So I like it, because it always just sort of felt inevitable that we would reach this point, so I'm glad that we got to this point. There were a couple funny moments, like when he's watching Oliver in action, really, for the first time, really seeing what Oliver does as Green Arrow. And then he sees Oliver brutally murder someone with an arrow.
Oh, yeah. And Felicity's like, oh, she like covers his eyes.
Yeah, and it was like, yeah, no crap. He shouldn't be watching this. What are you thinking? Yeah, so that was pretty funny.
But I thought it was really cool how Felicity had him come over and watch his dad just to, you know, just kind of sit there and work through things. And then I like how they had the family meeting later on, where Oliver, William, and Felicity just sit down and talk things out. I thought it was really cool.
They're married still, I'm not gonna lie.
What's that?
I forget that they're married. When the bully is teasing William on the bus and says, I saw your mom on TV, I immediately assumed it was his biological mom. Then I was like, oh, wait, that's right. Felicity is actually technically his mom now.
You know what? I forgot about that too until you just mentioned it. I was still thinking I forgot they got married on Crisis on Earth.
Right. I still forget sometimes when I'm watching, like, oh, right, they're married now.
Because they haven't done anything where they're, like, living in the same place. We haven't seen them living in the same place like a family.
They are, but we haven't seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. They really haven't shown it. So all we ever see is them either in passing to each other or in the Arrow Cave. It's nice. I wish we'd get some more of that family feeling from them. Because it's kind of cool dynamic. We've been seeing it in the Superman title with Clark, Lois, and John.
Well, that's the thing. I am really excited for the episodes coming out of this, because it's so much more interesting for me to see his son be excited that his dad is Green Arrow. Like, it's honestly, it frustrated me that this kid's dad was a freaking superhero, and he was like, no, you can't do that. I was like, what?
Yeah. I'm glad we're getting past that.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see a family that's excited. And I'm also excited to see Oliver be a guilt-free Green Arrow. Like, obviously, he's always got some sort of guilt deep down. But you know what I mean? Like, he could just be Green Arrow without feeling like a terrible person. I will say the one thing that I'm not looking forward to is the inevitable angst-ridden episode when John confronts Oliver about not getting to be Green Arrow again. We know that moment's coming, and yeah. I'm already rolling my eyes because I just. Okay, I know it. I know we have to have that scene, but I just don't want it. I don't want to see it.
They mentioned something about John taking up the mantle, if I remember right, in this episode. It was briefly mentioned.
Well, you saw him. He's already starting to sulk a little bit that he's not going to be. Like, you can tell he knows. He knows Oliver's not going to give the suit back up.
Something they've gotten away with is the FBI story. It just kind of fell off the face of the earth. I know it's going to pick back up sometime, but come on. The FBI should be tailing Oliver. They should know he's been acting as the Green Arrow. And maybe they're just going to come out and say, okay, we've got all this evidence right here. We've been watching you for the last several months. You know, all this.
They should. That would make the most sense if they were like, yeah, look, idiot, you kept going out and we kept getting more evidence. That would be the smart thing. But let's be real. This season's been super sloppy.
Yeah.
Like, they've just been playing really fast and loose with their storylines. And, I mean, honestly, if you're going to be lazy with your writing, this is sort of what you get. Like,
even though Team Arrow and Team Terrific are different, they're working separate. They're sharing information with each other. We see them come together at the end of the episode. And they're working together, but they're not working together.
The way the dynamic worked in this episode, I thought, worked really well. It was a great way to spread the attention to the different characters while still kind of making it mostly about Oliver. And then the last thing we should probably mention with this is that we learned that... So Caden has been going after Oliver because he is insistent that Oliver killed his son. But we can see from this that Oliver clearly did not, in fact, do that.
Yeah.
Which is good because that would basically be a repeat of the last scene. But I still think even though Oliver didn't actually do it, it's still way too close to what Prometheus's issue was with Oliver.
Yeah.
I think they honestly, it's the same thing as having, you know, consecutive speedsters in The Flash. It's the same thing where you have a villain that's basically just going after Oliver because he killed someone in the past. Second thing to go with that is I think it kind of, again, weakens Caden as a main villain because we know that his main reason to be a villain is stupid because Oliver didn't do it. Like, because we know this already, I'm already not taking him that seriously as the big bad guy.
I'm going to disagree with you. He seemed like a major threat in this one. Taking control of all the electronics and stuff.
I will agree that he's a major threat, but he doesn't seem like a guy that would be that hard to take for Oliver to take out. We have already seen, Oliver has already had like 3 or 4 chances where realistically Oliver would have put an arrow through him. Whereas like last season, when Oliver had opportunities to do that, he did. And he accidentally killed Felicity's boyfriend, or he couldn't because Prometheus had basically backed him into a corner and there was nothing Oliver could do.
Yeah, that's true.
And that I've mentioned, even with Damian Dark, Oliver tried multiple times, even though it never worked one time. He continually tried to fire arrows at Damian and was surprised every single time when Damian stopped them. So, like, he has clearly established that he's a dude that will let loose. If you give him a second, he will shoot his own doppelganger with arrows. So, I don't know. Nothing that's been seen. So, like, I believe that Caden James is a villain to be reckoned with, for sure. But I have not bought into him being a threat that is so dangerous that it takes an entire season to take him down. He seems like a, like... 2 or 3 episode villain at most to me is what he seems like.
So yeah, if Caden James hadn't surrounded himself with all those other villains, I'd agree with you. Of course, Oliver's had opportunities to shoot him, like you've said. So, and he hasn't taken them for whatever reason.
See, that's the thing. I think the show knows that Caden isn't enough on his own, which is why they've surrounded him with the villains. But to me, that should be a red flag. Like, if you know that you have to do that to beef up your villain, pick a different villain.
The thing is, they're not really doing anything with the other villains. Anatoni hasn't done anything yet, except stand around, hey, I'm on Caden James' side. Yeah. He would have been a great antagonist for Oliver this season.
He should have been the bad guy. I will go to bat for that one all season long. He absolutely should have been the villain for this season.
And they could have had Caden James be one of his, you know, close associates working for
Caden
him.
James,
I think that would have worked even better.
Like I said, Caden James would be a perfect mini arc. He is a great villain for like a 2 or 3 episode arc. Fantastic villain for that. I do not think he is a season villain.
We've talked about it before, how Arrow could probably go, you know, have different villains all seasons where they're doing short arcs.
Yeah.
Instead of having one long, big arc the whole season. You know, kind of like they've done, we've talked about this before, like they do on Gotham.
Yeah. Yes. I'm also, I don't know if you got this feeling. Are we sure there's not going to be somebody after Caden? Because clearly somebody is trying to convince Caden James that Oliver killed his son. Unless that is the season 7 villain, part of me wonders if there's going to be like a last quarter of the season reveal that there's some other guy that's actually the bad guy.
That, you know what? That would make sense. Somebody has got him because they've mentioned that somebody sent evidence to Caden James, making him believe that Oliver's the one that killed his son. So I can very much believe that there's somebody else behind this.
If it is the season 7 villain, I think I'd be pretty frustrated. I'm not going to lie, because you basically burned an entire season just to get to the next villain.
the thing that really disappointed me at the end of this episode was Oliver ended up wiring the money. And yeah. I know that's going to come back and bite him in the ass. Yeah. I'm wondering if he's going to get in trouble with the FBI or something for doing that.
If the FBI comes back. Again, this has just been such a sloppy season. I just don't even know.
I don't know. I think Caden James is going to use the fact that he wired the money to him against him somehow.
I agree. I would assume, at least. Otherwise, what's the point?
I felt like, because he doesn't really, like you said, he doesn't really need the money. It felt like a setup to, you know, discredit him as the mayor or something. Or, you know, well, look, Oliver's sending money to a secret account, you know, trying to discredit him or something. It'll be interesting to see what happens. One thing about Caden James is he's really smart. He's not that much to a threat to Oliver personally, but he is a smart villain.
He is, most of the time.
All right, well, that wraps up for show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, so my shout-out for this week, because we're getting Tobias Wells, the big bad over in Black Lightning, I thought I'd mention a comic with him. I already mentioned he is in the very first Black Lightning issue, so I thought I'd mention the New 52 debut of both Black Lightning and Tobias Wells is in DC Presents number 13. It also co-guest stars, Blue Devil. So it's Black Lightning and Blue Devil taking on Tobias Wells.
All right, and I'm going to shout out about our Patreon page. We'll have a link for it in our show notes. You can support Earth Station DCU on Patreon and be entered into a monthly drawing to win a 50-50 Amazon gift card. We've got $1 levels, $5 level, $10 level. So your $1 level can get you one entry, $5 level gets you 5 entries, $10 level gets you 10 entries for a 50-50 Amazon gift card. That means whatever half our jackpot is for that month, half of it goes to us and half of it goes to you. We use it for our Lipson expenses for the podcast and, of course, for getting comics to review. So, all right, next week we'll be talking about we got some annuals coming out because it's a 5th Wednesday of the month. So we got several annuals we'll talk about. And then, of course, we'll be talking about the CW shows again. So some of them we've seen already, and I'm excited to talk about them. All right. Well, if you guys want to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.